Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to The Poisoner's Cabinet. I'm Sinead.
And I'm Nick.
And this is your weekly podcast exploring the lives of the great poisoners, macabre murders and captivating crimes from across the centuries and creating curious cocktails inspired by the tales that we tell. And it's episode 195.
195. Ooh, it's approaching.
It's The 200s are approaching. La la, the
200s are coming.
Niche reference there. How are you, Nick?
I'm all right.
You're all right? Happy birthday!
My birthday! So, as much as we bitched around the other day about anyone who has, like, oh, you've got a birthday week. So that is, this is my birthday week.
This is the birthday week because...
It's spread out a lot, really, hasn't it?
Well, because Patreons want to wish you happy birthday and the main episode people want to wish you happy birthday.
Well, thank you very much to everyone who has messaged and said happy birthday. It's very generous. Thank you very much.
And did you have a lovely day?
I had a splendid day.
What did you do and what did you get?
Oh, I got lovely things. Went for a lovely lunch with some lovely people. A restaurant near here by the sea. Michelin stars, very fancy. And then came home. And I had some sort of friends in the evening. And they bought me some Lego, which is very exciting. And I got 400 candles.
Yeah. Me and Emma really need to coordinate on the gifts
yeah.
that we get you.
I mean, it's impressive. How well people know me as to the sort of things that I would like.
I think it's a very sweet sign, I think, of the three of us and sort of how we're all the same person now. And that we all, but that me and Emma just independently both thought, you know what Nick would love? You know what Nick would love? A lovely Jo Malone candle. We both got you one without consulting each other. Like, oh,
just when you both bought out the same Jo Malone bag. And it's like, that looks familiar. Thankfully, it was a different candle inside each
yes.
bag. So it wasn't you hadn't gone for the same scent.
My one had hemlock in it because on brand all the time. And both of us said exactly the same phrase. Like, there's a wee gift receipt in there. If you want to change it, you can. You can. If it's shite, you can change it. Sounds like a wonderful birthday. You have such good friends.
It's marvellous. I have splendid friends.
We're having to restrain Nick today.
Because I want to build it. I want to build it.
Also, I will put up in the next couple of days for those who are salivating and interested. Nick's curtains are up.
That was another my birthday treat.
Yeah.
Curtains fitted in the morning.
Those who have been with us for a little while know the best part of a year
best
ago.
Best part of a year. I started
Nick bought
this.
Fabric to create his beautiful, beautiful curtains, and then he had to move very suddenly. But they're up, and they are.
They are there.
Stunning.
They are. Very beautiful, and I'm very happy.
So curtain
yes, I think Sinead
back.
Took some pictures.
I did, yes. I'm the one who's documenting your life.
Yes.
Any poisonings this week?
No, it's birthday week.
Birthday week.
No, birthday week, unless someone's poisoned the cake.
We've got fizz, you've got cake in there, we've got Pringles left over, and Lego.
And Lego. Poison Lego. No, that's sad.
Build it quickly. Well, speaking of giving your friends fabulous gifts and poisoning them while you're at it, I think it is time for us to thank our delicious Patreon subscribers.
Indeed we should. Thank you very much this week to Kim B.
And to Stephanie Osterday.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, you sexy, sexy Patreon subscribers. Well, we had fun on Patreon this week.
It was an interesting one this week.
It was an interesting one that we'd done before.
Yeah.
It's finally happened on Patreon.
Yeah. It has happened.
Bless everyone who was very, very nice because we recorded an episode right up to the wire because it's Nick's birthday week and he wouldn't stop celebrating. And yeah, we realised that we did an episode that we've done before and it completely had gone out of our heads.
But only when someone mentioned it. So even yes. all the way through the recording, so yep. I wrote it and I researched it and I thought, this is a great story. Have we not done this story before? We recorded it, we sat here, neither of us were like, oh no, we've already done this one. Mm. And until someone came up on Patreon and said, you're right, another one.
And they were very nice. Everyone's been great because a few people have said, can you revisit some old episodes? And that is something we're looking at on the main show, not as a replacement or anything, but to go back to the really early ones where we didn't know what the hell we were doing.
Because this was, what, December 2020?
It was 4 years ago. Three and a bit years ago.
Yeah. So I can't remember the Patreon one I did last week.
No.
Let alone 3.5 years ago.
No. It's a really good foundation for doing a show. I have now made all of our checks more robust. The spreadsheets are now bursting. I know. I've spent all day double, triple checking everything. And this is a nice tip, I suppose, going forward, if we ever do retrospectives. It's because I did the story the first time. No memory of it. But now you did it. And I think that's why it's just gone out of a head, because I have no memory. Usually if you research something, write it again, you go,
I remember this phrase.
But then hearing someone else tell the story is completely brand new.
Yeah, I'd be interested because I need to go back and listen to that one. Just see, because I'm sure we came up with
the same jokes,
the same nonsense. Or is it completely different nonsense? I don't know.
Yeah, I've not listened to it yet. And everyone said actually it's really interesting listening to the two back and forth. Anyway. If you want to know what the hell we're talking about and want to get crazy stuff from us,
if you want to listen to the same episode twice,
that we don't intend, please consider joining us on Patreon. On Patreon, you do get an extra new, completely new episode every single week, as well as lots of bonus content. On Patreon right now, there's over 170 bonus Deadly Nightcaps episodes. There is even more content with Cyanide Connoisseurs. There are videos, there are bloopers, there's little chats as well. And also our book club is on Patreon, a wonderful community where we get together once a month, well, sort of once every 6 weeks, and you get to see my lovely face while we talk about books and drink heavily. It's perfect.
What more could you want?
So you can find out more at patreon.com/thepoisonouscabinet. Well, Nick, are you ready to drink cocktails and talk about poison? Or we could drink poison and talk about cocktails.
Okay, let's do that.
Okay, that first one?
Yes, okay.
Oh, hooray.
Let's do that.
It is my story this week, and we can't possibly have a story without a cocktail in hand. As you know, dear listeners, every week we choose a secret ingredient that is inspired by the tale that we tell, and it will flavour our cocktail of the week. So, this week's secret ingredient is Rats.
Now, it's definitely one we haven't done before.
We double triple checked
on that one.
When I put up rats, quite a few people came forward like, ooh, interesting, and sort of cottoned on to what I'm doing in this episode. Though some people did say the plague. It's not the plague this week, because the plague is more of a thing that happened rather than a crime that was committed.
Well, unless there was one man who unleashed the plague.
Well, I think we talk about this back and forth, and maybe for season 5, things like the Great Fire of London and the plague and all the history and the funny stories around it. It's not necessarily a crime, though, so a true crime podcast, can we get away with it? It's up to you listeners to tell us.
True crime/history/stuff we find interesting.
Pretty much. We'll find a crime in there. Someone stole a groat.
Yes, indeed.
Yes, I did go down a rabbit hole going, ooh, the plague. Oh, no, write this week's episode. Yes, but you can tell us if you want some Black Death shenanigans.
Who doesn't love that?
Who doesn't? But it's not that. With rats as your ingredient. I do like a rat.
Good for you.
What have you come up with?
Well, not the easiest of ones to find. Cocktails fine.
Lovely little rat.
Yes, there's not many. There aren't cocktails called The Lovely Little Rat.
And I want to know why.
So I was trying to find something like related to with tails or eyes, because I like little beady eyes.
What?
No, like little beady eyes.
You can't go rat eyes.
If I could find like a red eye or a beady eye cocktail or something like that. Well, good, because I didn't.
Good. That's why, because everyone else went, that's mental.
So I found one.
Mm-hmm.
Found one that we're going to have.
Yeah.
We're going to have, well, we were going to have a white rat.
Okay.
But when I was preparing things earlier, I realised I did not have one of the particular ingredients that was required for this. Mm. So I've come up with an alternative.
Ooh, okay.
Which I'm going to label the yellow rat.
If this has chartreuse in it, I'm going to stab you in the eyes.
Well,
the yellow rat.
The yellow rat.
Oh, that does not sound like a well rat. That is a rat that has been experimented on.
Jaundiced rat.
Oh, God. Okay. I'm worried now. Okay. Well, I think it is high time for us to scuttle into the poisonous cabinet kitchen and shake up a storm. So we'll see you in a minute.
We'll see you in a minute.
And we're back.
Hello.
So, Nick, the yellow rat.
The yellow rat.
The rat that has had tough times.
Yes, had bad, bad times.
But this looks very beautiful. Mm. It's very clear with a hint of yellow.
Hint of yellow.
Which makes me afraid, but hopeful, because there are good yellow things out there.
There are good yellow things
but
out there.
But then there's one bad-ish thing. It's not the green, but...
Could be the green rabbit. Green rabbit, the rat. green rat.
The green rabbit came to see the yellow rat, and they had lovely times together with the purple
monkey.
And
they all lived happily ever after.
Oh, it's a beautiful children's tale of them getting shit-faced. And very chilled. Did you chill the glasses?
I did chill the glasses, yes.
How fancy you are.
Okay. I'm desperately fancy.
I think we should dive in.
Okay.
Okay, well, Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Okay, smells nice. Okay.
Ooh.
Ooh, okay, mate.
That's interesting.
That is interesting.
It's going to send you insane.
This has got absinthe in it, isn't it?
No.
Is it not?
No.
What's going on? Does it have yellow chartreuse in it?
Nope.
I didn't think it did, because my eyes aren't bleeding. it's got Strega. Oh, well, I'm lost.
Two yellow things in the world.
You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to base it on what I'm tasting rather than my fears. Has this got a hint of chocolate to it? Why doesn't it have anything that I think it does?
This is quite fun.
It's strong, I'll give you that. Right, second sip, which may be a mistake.
I'm liking that.
That is really nice. It's complex. What's in it? Why? Why don't I know what's in it?
Come on, give me one thing.
One gin?
There's gin.
There is gin.
There's
Yay.
Gin.
Okay. Gin.
There are other things.
Is there something twiggy in there? Not really twiggy?
Well, ish.
I feel like there's something chocolatey in there. I know you've said there's no cacao in there.
There's no cacao. There's no... not really, I would say.
I don't know why I'm getting that. Maybe there's something... Maybe I'm an idiot. it's entirely possible. Rum?
No.
Sugar?
No.
What are all the things? What could be yellow that's in this? Something citrus. No, but that doesn't taste citrusy. Like triple sec? Grand Marnier?
There is some triple sec.
There we go.
So there is some, orange Curaçao.
Orange Curaçao. Right. What's the yellow thing? Is it yellow?
It's just yellow. It's just, it's just food dye thrown in there.
Saffron. What else is yellow? What else is... Why is... Is it something really obvious that I'm missing?
I wouldn't say it's obvious.
So it's not... It's not.
It's something certainly something we've had numerous
banana.
Times before.
No.
We've definitely had it before.
Oh, wait. The thing. I'm saying words. This is the thing that you put in a white Negroni.
Yeah.
It is. It freaking is. It's
what's it called?
I don't know. Why is this gone out of my head? It's the... God damn it to hell.
This is funny.
It's gone.
Begins with an S.
I know it begins with an S. I know. Suze. It's fucking Suze. Every time with the Suze. Suze kills me. It takes away my brain cells. Okay. Right. So after that roller coaster, so there's gin, there's triple sec, there's Suze.
Yep.
Anything else?
Two.
Two.
Bitters. Two, not including bitters.
Oh, okay. Bitters. It's too painful. Carry on. Now, okay. This is delicious, but I'm not going to get it.
There is dry vermouth in there. Maraschino.
What?
Yep. Maraschino in there.
What?
And we have some orange bitters.
Yes.
And I've also used some ouzu. Sort of lemony citrus.
Oh, okay.
Bitters, right. Okay. As well in there.
Oh, I thought you meant like
what?
The drink.
No.
Ouzu.
No, like, no.
Yeah.
Isn't there? It's a Japanese citrusy.
Yeah.
Yuzu.
It sounded the same.
Okay. But it's not that.
Okay, good. Okay.
Are you okay?
This is going to send me. Why did you let me have wine beforehand? Why did you let me have fizz? What do you think of that?
I really like it. The white rabbit calls for, the gin, the maraschino, the orange curacao, the dry vermouth. Now, rather than the Suze and the bitters, it's called Amer Pico. It's a French liqueur. Mm-hmm. Sort of very similar to the variety of Amaros and things we've looked at. And that's the one I didn't have in the cupboard. So reading about it, it said it's heavy on the gentian root, heavy on the bitter orange.
Mm.
Yeah, and citrus. Those are the main flavours in it. So I thought, okay, well, I've got Suze. That's ginger and root base and some sort of bitter orange bitters and some other yuzu citrus in there. So I thought, try and make that pico up with what I've had to create this. And I really like it.
Nick, you know what you've done?
I've made a cocktail.
A really good cocktail with the Suze. Because remember, every time we tried the Suze before...
It's only like a quarter of an ounce. So it's a good amount of on there, but you can taste it.
When we've tried the Suze before, it always foxes us, but it's never quite as good. Mm. It's always disappointing. That is blinding.
I like that. That's genius. I like that a lot.
That may be the finest cocktail you've ever made. Mm. Because it's complex, it's sultry.
I am quite pleased with that.
Ooh, look at you with your yellow rat.
I know, my yellow rat.
Little rat that you are. Wonderful. Okay, well, a resounding success. With the yellow rat, a Nick Gordon original, firmly in hand. Are you ready for a story?
Yes.
You ready to be regaled with tales?
Tell me tales.
Tell your tales. Well, tales. Rats. Okay, so this week with rats.
Yes.
What I wanted to do was I wanted to go back to our roots, as people often ask us, because it's been a little while since we've had a good old poisoning. A little while since we've done a poisoning on the main episode. We've sort of had hints of it. We've had little bits of it. But the thing is, with a lot of the poisoning stories, we've covered a lot of the big ones. And what is left are some smaller ones. When you look at them at first, you kind of go, there's not enough there. So what I have for you today is, well, intentionally two, unless we get really carried away with one.
Okay. We'll see what happens.
But our dear friend, rat poison, does feature. That is the common thread there. But nice. There's also an extra rat element in one of them.
Okay.
Which I was very pleased to find. When the person go, oh, are you going to do the plague? I went, fuck. could have used rats for that. That's more fleas, really. But so, yes, I'm going to take you on a little journey.
Nice.
Through the annals of time.
Entertain me.
To talk you through some good old-fashioned poisoning cases.
Lovely.
Lovely. So we're going to start in Lincolnshire.
Lincolnshire.
In 1868, with murder most foul and rats aplenty.
Delightful.
Well, you don't see a lot of rats in there, but for reasons. We are off to the home of Richard and Priscilla Biggerdike.
Okay.
No laughing.
No laughing at all.
No, Biggerdike. It's a name.
Yes.
One of the reports just wrote it as Biggerdick.
Nice.
And that was 2 hours of me doing Monty and Python impressions and not writing. I think they just did that for fun. They were
that's
like,
fun,
who's going to check?
Yeah, exactly.
Who's going to check?
Let's just go with that. Let's just go, ooh, Biggerstickers.
Biggerstickers. Biggerdike, actually, the name, there are still people descended from the Biggerdikes in Lincolnshire. So, because I was trying to find a little bit of history and sort of doing a bit of tracing behind it. I'm not very good at Ancestry kind of .com and doing all those sort of join the dots. This is a true crime podcast. I don't care whose auntie was who, but for reasons I'll explain later. But we're at the simple rural home of the Biggerdikes. Mm-hmm. It's not a fancy place by any stretch of the imagination. It is a simple two-roomed hovel, as it was called, in the village of Stickney.
Stickney?
Stickney, Lincolnshire. Now, little aside, I always like to check the history of any of the small, tiny villages that we visit in England, because you never know when there's fun bit of history.
There's usually some craziness has gone in there.
Oh, yeah, because they've always got a Wikipedia entry, because someone has written a Wikipedia entry for them, bless their hearts. And generally, yes, they were in the Doomsday Book, and there's a church, and there's a thing. The most recent update for this village from 2012... Local amenities include a public house.
My God.
That has closed. Operated for 100 years now, is closed. The village had a miniature railway, which has now moved, and a local shop, which does not serve as a post office.
Does not.
That is a weird thing to put. That is someone very passive-aggressively just shouting at people who keep coming in asking for stamps.
Yes.
Yeah. It's not a post office, Susan. Stop trying to give me your envelopes. I don't care if your mother's sick in Australia. Anyway, back in 1868, simple rural village, and the Biggerdike household is cramped, to say the least. Mm. This is your typical hard-working labourer's family home. Two rooms.
Yep.
Two room, kitchen area. There's no bathroom.
Oh, no.
Fancy. Yeah, and then the other room with the beds where everyone sleeps. And I mean everyone, because you've got husband and wife, Richard and Priscilla. They're three children. Mm-hmm. Some people wrote it as five, just for fun, but it was three. And two male lodgers, adult male lodgers, living in there. And when I actually wrote this draft the first time, I wrote lobsters.
Two adult male lobsters living
I so wanted to keep it in. We're living with two lobsters. They take up an entire bed. So yeah, but not lobsters. No, it's two men who live in there. And in this setup, you've got one room with two beds, and they're not going to be luxurious super king beds. In one bed, the entire family sleeps in one bed, and the two male lodgers sleep in the other bed next to each other, staring at each other as they fall asleep. So lovely, snug. Now, the lodgers are 30-year-old George Ironmonger. Can you guess what his profession was?
He's a ditch digger.
He was a fisherman. He didn't listen, clearly. And 21-year-old Thomas Proctor, who was a rat catcher. That was my little tidbit in there. Oh my God. I bet it smells awful in there.
It's not going to be pleasant, no.
Fisherman, rat killer, daddy, Richard Biggerdyke, is a well digger.
Yeah.
So yeah, he's digging shit all day. So everyone's just awful in that room.
It's not good.
Yeah. But yes, the family all sleep in one bed, the lodgers in the other. It's referred to in the press variously later on as a squalid little pit, hovel, grim it is. The children are small, I should point out. They're not adults, all sleeping at home. Now, mother of the household, Priscilla, our FMC here, she was born Priscilla Hilly in 1833 in Lincolnshire. And not much is known about her childhood. Pretty much it was just written down, she married.
Yes. She was born, she married and had some children.
Yeah, she got married to Richard in 1855. Husband and wife are now in their mid-30s. Richard, as I said, he's a well sinker. It's got all sorts of different names. So well sinker. So dig some wells. Backbreaking labour he's doing all day. But he's fit and he's healthy and he's young. You know, he's out at the crack of dawn, digging away, coming back to get his food and his dinner from his wife. She's at home with the children and the lodgers, preparing all the meals, juggling all the tasks that need to be done. Close quarters can
keep an
only...
eye on the lobsters. Training the lobsters.
You're going to make us millions.
For their moment in the sun.
What do you think they're going to be doing with them? Is that like a family travelling show? A
travelling show, absolutely, yeah.
The lobsters just sit there. Yeah. Has anyone ever seen a lobster? It's like, it's England. Yes, of course we have. We have resplendent beaches. Yeah, lobsters aside. Close quarters can only cause tension in the marriage. The couple have been arguing for a fair few months now. Mm. Yeah, a lot of crosswords back and forth, you know, according to the neighbours who are definitely listening in every day. And like, neighbours would be literally the next room over.
Yeah.
Glass against the wall isn't even necessary. Just poke your head around the door.
Through the wall.
Going, <"Hello." laughs> Just like put your hand through. Going, I can't hear you. Speak up. In fact, Richard is starting to suspect that when he leaves the family home at the crack of dawn, he leaves his family bed, someone else is slipping into the bed with the wife. One of the lodgers may just be going, that looks comfy and cosy.
Comfy and cosy over there.
Can I get in there? Don't mind being watched by the other lodger and all your children. But yes, Thomas Proctor, the youngest lodger, he suspects he is having it away with his wife. May even be the father of their little baby. Now, Thomas was described in reports of the time, the most uncouth looking individual in the whole parish.
Oh my God.
His countenance was very repugnant. He had a very high back and his legs appeared to have a serious malformation. So we don't know what that was. Maybe he did have a physical defect.
Some sort of rickets or something like that.
Quite possibly. Mm. Or they didn't know what knees were. It was a huge deformity on your legs. That's your knees. The fisherman, known as Ironmonger.
Fisherman Ironmonger,
on the other hand, although by no means intellectual, has a rather smart appearance. Hmm. But she looked past that to the rat-catching weirdo.
Who was probably desperately intelligent, and they had deep, meaningful conversations.
There you go.
He wrote poetry. It was lovely. Yes, he was an ugly fucker, but he was clever and romantic and lovely.
Oh my God. It's like a Hunchback of Notre Dame sort of situation.
Precisely.
Yeah, yeah. Beautiful. Your eyes are like a rat's. Your face is like a rat.
Your whiskers are whiskery. Your tail is...
Years from now, a man will invent a cocktail in your honour. But strange legs and enormous back, apparently, aside, Priscilla falls for him as rumoured to have had this tryst. And so a bit of a horrible situation has developed. Richard would apparently ask her repeatedly about the baby's true parentage. Like, is this my baby? Is it his baby? And she would only reply, well, it's mine.
Nice. Wait, how's she going to know?
Yeah.
So which one it is.
Sorry, I keep a detailed list of all the times you guys are shagging me.
Could be either one of you. I don't know.
Yes, but the men don't understand. Women, don't you just intrinsically know?
Yes, don't just know. Don't just concentrate really, really hard, and that's how it works.
There it is. Yes, yes, yes. So things aren't great. On the 20th of September, Priscilla bakes some shortcakes for dinner.
Nice.
Shortcakes, there's a bit of mutton as well. Mutton and shortcake.
Oh, so we're going to have a bloody cake as an ingredient.
Shortcakes, it's not like cake, though.
Shortcakes.
It's like a bready kind of mush.
I like
it's
bread. Like...
We've had bread.
Have we?
I think we've had bread.
I could have had toast.
It's like not toast. An ingredient for a cocktail. Shortcakes, it's not like a lovely buttery shortbread.
Yeah.
If it was shortbread, then we'd be all over that, but no, sorry. It brews a big pot of tea. We've had tea.
Yeah.
So she and the two lodgers sit down for their meal about 5 p.m. They have two out of the three shortcakes that she's made, and then the third is for Richard when he comes home. Hard day's labour. Comes in, settles down in front of the fire. She serves him his tea and his shortcake. She's laid out the milk and the tea and everything, all just ready just to pour and everything. And people are mulling around. He takes down his tea and his cake. And then within a very short space of time, he is writhing in agony.
No.
No, no. Vomiting, crying in pain. Awful, awful. And there's, you know, just pandemonium in the house. Witnesses would later say that Priscilla was coming out and going, "My dick's not right." I'm not kidding. That was what was said.
That's his name.
Yep, there it is. Yeah, my dick's gone very weird after his tea. Yeah. And there we are. The doctor is called for. Does nothing. Just stands there and goes, "Oh, yeah.
Oh, look at that. What's going on there?
Oh, dear." Some sort of oral medicine is left for him that does nothing. And a mustard plaster for his stomach. I don't know what that is. Just smear mustard over it and that'll probably calm him down. And
it probably is like a poultice.
A poultice,
type thing.
Yeah. So I'll be back later and good luck with this. I have my suspicions, but I can literally do nothing. Goes off, Richard dies.
Yeah.
Of course, Richard is dead by the next morning by 6 a.m. The doctor who attended, Dr. Maxwell, yes, as I said, like this looks like poison. This looks like poison. Can't help him, really, but by God, now I'll leap into action. Clearly knew that he has to report this. So he calls for a post-mortem. And, you know, it's 1868. He knows that they're going to be specialists. You can be able to look into his innards, quite literally. He does a post-mortem and he's able to report to the coroner that he sees an irritant in the man's stomach. That's enough for the coroner to go, right, okay, we're going to call an inquest. Also, we're going to send the stomach off for analysis. We're going to send it off to experts, not you. But good job in spotting some stuff. So the inquest is held at the local pub. Yay!
Nice.
Which we love, the Rose and Crown. The results of the second analysis come back via Professor Taylor from Guy's Hospital, and he's looked into the stomach and he does confirm the presence of
rats.
Arsenic! Arsenic alarm! Arsenic alarm! Arsenic alarm! There it is, people. Oh, it's been a while. Get him in while you can. Ooh, enjoy. There were no rats in the stomach, but there was rat poison.
Rat poison.
Rat poison. People buying up the rat poison and shove it in there. Yes. The professor is in no doubt that the victim died of arsenic poisoning and that there was enough in his system to kill two men.
Nice.
Yeah, so they really did it. Now, from the Boston Guardian at the time, Boston, I should point out, is a local area to Lincolnshire. Yes. It's not that Boston reported on this. I'm sure they did. I'm sure they were fascinated. They said, when the news spread, or that when the inquest was opened, the inhuman outrage, as might be imagined, causes great excitement to the district. And in the village itself, every man, woman, and child are discoursing on the indelicate particulars connected with the crime.
Well, absolutely, they bloody would be.
Yep, toddlers are talking about it in the playground.
Definitely be discoursing on the unpleasant particulars.
I mean, it's the most exciting thing that's probably happened.
Absolutely.
And ages, babies are chatting about it. So, Proctor is arrested based on what Priscilla tells the police. He's protesting his innocence all the way, but Priscilla is also brought in. She insists, "No, I'm innocent. I have done nothing to my husband." But when she is taken in and questioned, she starts making strange statements to the police. While waiting at the train station, they have to go to Spilsby jail, and the officer is talking about the train times because she's sort of it seems like she's staring off into nothing, and he's saying like, "Well, we're getting this train," and she says, "I was not thinking about the trains. I was thinking about what I should say that I haven't yet. I found a piece of paper in his pocket, wrote upon, saying that he had done it to himself, and the reason was stated he was so much in debt."
Oh.
And then the police officer said, "I understand from someone your husband could neither read or write." She replied, someone must have done it for him. And the policeman said, what have you done with the paper? Says, yeah. Oh, I burned it.
Right.
Burned it. Will you tell the gentleman, as in the gentleman of the inquest? Yeah. He's like, definitely. Yes. I'm going to tell them
absolutely.
This.
Absolutely.
The inquest continues. They continue with statements from witnesses, from neighbours, who are only too happy to turn up in their Sunday best. Ooh, and yes. Just go, every little thing that
all
I have
the
seen.
Gossip.
Yeah, I could have put all of the transcript in here and like some of the statements. They're so pointless in some of the... I've got the gist of them here, but if I actually put the actual text in here, it's just them going, and I looked out the window, and twas a day, and over there, I turning slightly to my left, I saw her. Priscilla, when she's brought in by the police, she points a finger at Thomas Proctor. She says...
Yes.
Her supposed lover, she tells the police she saw Thomas putting white powder into her husband's tea and also adding it to her husband's back pain medicine. He had medicine that he took for his back pain at the end of each day, and also to the medicine that the doctor had brought him to treat the vomiting.
Okay, so going, covering all bases.
Yep, did that on the floor, on the drapes, everything like that. Yeah, so she saw him do all of this.
Scattering it around the house.
Yeah, rubbing it in his face. There we are. Covering the children in it. She saw him do this. She didn't do anything. She didn't do anything. She insists that she saw him do that, but she admits that she did nothing. She said that she tried some of the medicine that her husband got, but it made her terribly sick herself. At the inquest, as I said, statements from the neighbours claiming that Priscilla had access to rat poison to kill vermin. She was always telling people, going, oh, have you got mice? I've got some white mercury. And telling them that, oh, she's always got a supply, and that she'd had a supply of poison for 3 to 4 months beforehand. Oh, yes, she was only too happy to tell everyone about it. They heard a commotion when Richard fell ill, and that they had heard her say in the past that she wished her husband would be brought home from his work dead and stiff. At the inquest, they all return a verdict. The jury returns a verdict of willful murder of Richard by Priscilla and Proctor, Thomas Proctor. The pair are due to stand trial at the Lincolnshire Winter Assizes. Mm-hmm. Not the summer.
Not the summer, all the spring.
And they decided, let's just try Priscilla. Try Priscilla. Because
women are evil.
Women are evil, obviously. We all know that. The wombs, they talk. But fair point. Thomas's... What they know about Thomas is only from Priscilla's testimony. She has said that. And they go, okay, we'll try Priscilla. If stuff comes out, then we'll try him separately.
Okay.
So they're just going to do it that way. Her trial begins in December 1868. It lasts 7 hours.
Impressive.
Yes.
A lengthy discourse on her guilt there.
The witnesses from the inquest are all coming in, all the neighbours going, yes, I saw these things. Please stick to the point. We don't care about your shoes. The defence takes the line that Richard may have accidentally poisoned himself because he was illiterate. Because he didn't know what he was taking.
Thought he was going for the sugar pot.
Indeed. And he was going for the massive sack of arsenic. Yeah. May have mixed up his medicine, poured the wrong thing in his tea. Prosecution are saying, well, was it Priscilla or her lover? And they knew exactly what was happening. The jury don't even leave the stand.
Okay. Well, I mean, you've got a lot to get through in these assizes. You've got a lot of cases to get through.
There's
so
no sandwiches out there.
Exactly. There's no point coming and going. Mm. Just like, everyone agree? Yep. Kill him. Yeah. You've got a queue of people to hang coming up through the door, so...
Guilty. Now, they return the verdict of guilty, which means death, a penalty, though the jury asks for mercy for the judge, and the judge asks why, and they make the point that the evidence is all circumstantial. Because there is no evidence to say she didn't put the poison into his food. She says she saw someone else do it. There's nothing to prove what she did, but... The pathologists and the experts say he 100%
died by arsenic poisoning.
Someone poisoned him. There's no way this is just, with the don't buy the accident thing. However, it doesn't work.
Yeah.
The clerk of the court gave Priscilla a chance to plead for her case because they do turn and say, do you want to plead for mercy? She just said nothing. She was just crying. Apparently just tears rolled down her cheek and she didn't say anything. She didn't take the opportunity to say a word. The judge donned the black cap and sentenced her to death. She would go to the gallows on the 9th of January, 1869. She, weirdly, in her last week that she was in jail, she sent a letter to the employer. This is from, again, the Boston Guardian. to the employer of George Ironmonger, one of her lodgers.
The fisherman.
Yes, the fisherman. And the details of the letter is classic, like, local journalism. They're going, which the authorities, for certain reasons, do not think it right to publish. In this letter, the prisoner, although utterly callous and indifferent to her own position, implored Ironmonger to seek forgiveness for his sins and to mourn her sad end. And she also expressed a hope that he would not despise those, alluding to her children, who were left behind. So why is she writing to Ironmonger?
Well, like, that's very true. Yeah, why are you saying to Ironmonger, look after my kids?
Yeah.
If Proctor is apparently the father of one of them.
Well, yeah. And also, according to this, I mean, like, the press may have completely changed this, but to seek forgiveness for his sins.
Yeah.
Did he know
was
as well?
Was she sleeping with the other one?
Maybe. And they all were in on it, but she's the one who's going to be hanged. And then again, from the same report, Ironmonger tried to see her while she was banged up in Lincoln Castle. She wasn't allowed in. Her family came to see her. Everyone was imploring her to confess, and she said nothing. She wouldn't say anything. She was like, no. She saw the priest before she went to the gallows. She enjoyed a hearty breakfast as well.
Good for her.
She was pinioned as she was taken to the gallows. And the chaplain gave his address to the crowd and said that she had not confessed. And the chaplain was talking to the assembled crowds about the wages of sin and blah, 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 we can assume. She did turn around and said, shall we be much longer?
Yes, come on. Let's get on with it.
But then the chaplain, again, did this whole thing about her pressing to confess. You must confess because God will forgive you, but I can't give you absolution for your sins here. And that you will still say you did not administer the poison yourself, that you did not see any other person administer it, that you were entirely free from the crime. Do you say so now? In a firm voice, Priscilla answered, yes. When she went up to the gallows, apparently her last words, it was a bit weird, said to the hangman, surely my troubles are over and shame on you. You are not going to hang me. Maybe that's a little bit of fear at the end going, yes, you're not really going to do this. But he did.
Yeah.
He did. It wasn't a clean death, unfortunately. She was hanged. She died. She was buried in the grounds of Lincoln Castle. 14 years later, apparently Thomas Proctor allegedly confessed.
Yeah. So I don't think she did it.
On his deathbed. Lovely. Yeah. That he had killed Richard Biggadike with arsenic, that Priscilla saw him do it but did nothing.
Yeah.
Let it happen, but she was the one who hanged for it.
Yeah, she took the fall.
He had no repercussions.
Because she loved him. But so, then why is she writing to bloody Ironmonger? Look after my kids.
It's a weird thing. So this case has been revisited a little bit from people. I think they try to
get the name wrong in the art. Just got the two tenants mixed up.
That's why I'm wondering. Something. Like going like Ironmonger rather than Proctor. That I did. I'm just reporting it as I've got it in the statements. A few people have questioned going, I think rightly so, should she have been hanged for seeing someone else do something and she did nothing? She was in that way complicit.
Yeah.
She was an accomplice. She didn't stop the person putting the powder in there. She didn't know what it, maybe she didn't know what it was. Or maybe she knew exactly what it was. And it was like, you poison him.
Yeah. I mean, I love the idea of it. Oh yeah, if this one goes right, then we'll charge him as well. I was like, by that point, everyone's got their sort of justice that they want out of it. So
yeah.
what's the point in doing anything else? Now we've killed someone. All is well. Everyone's happy. So
everyone's la-di-da. I mean, I do understand it, and I think it would stand today that if someone had say, well, it was all his fault, it's like, unless you've got any evidence for it, let's try you. And then if stuff comes out in this court case, we go, oh, actually, we can use that. Fine. Back then, maybe not as sophisticated.
No, yes.
There we are. But yes, that is the story of the Biggadites, of the Biggadites. Poisoning. There is a book about this. Unfortunately, I couldn't get a copy of it. The great Linda Stratman said it was good. She did some blurb on it, but it was called The Passion and the Poison.
Oh, that's a bit dramatic.
That's a bit much.
It's a bit over the top, isn't it, for a Lincolnshire hovel?
little bit. It's like, this is all the information there is on it. I don't know what that book had. Maybe some padding.
A lot of padding. It may have been
fantastic, and maybe there were more resources in there. Unfortunately, I couldn't get a copy of it. A weird aside to this, when I was right at the end of writing this and researching it, there was another piece about the Biggadike name several years earlier. In 1821, a woman was murdered by her husband of the same Biggadike family. And I think it's Priscilla's great-grandmother, possibly, or great-aunt.
Dramatic.
Again, this is where I didn't delve too much into the ancestry.
The family trees.
Because it gets very complicated. And then again, some of these reports are all over the place. But yeah, a woman named Mary Bigadite married to James Cawthorne, unhappily. Yeah. And he wanted out of the marriage. He ended up being charged with her murder. Charged with willful feloniously and of malice of forethought, did secretly mix and mingle with milk, flour and sugar a certain deadly poison, 1 drachma of arsenic, for which he, knowing it to be poison, did give to his wife on the 19th of March, 1821, intending that she should drink it. He also strangled her.
Okay. But what was the ingredients there? That sounds like a great cake. Like an arsenic cake.
No, milk, flour, and sugar.
Milk, flour, and sugar.
So why? Is that milk and sugar? Nice. Well, maybe he was making a cake.
Yes, sort of flour. You wouldn't put that in a drink, really, would you? Flour.
And it could have been an ingredient. So, I don't think we've done flour.
Some sort of pancakes.
Oh, nice.
Arsenic pancakes.
Oh, yeah. It wasn't far off from Shrove Tuesday, was it?
In the shape of a skull and crossbones.
Yes, and he was arrested, full of tears in process of his innocence. But then he had a girlfriend on the side. He had a secret love, Charlotte Tomlinson, who he wrote this letter. And the letter is really lengthy, but I'll give you a snippet of it. I, for the love of you, a desolate death must go through. Poetic. And then it just descends. I hope you will have a good Christian heart in you for to come up this afternoon, my dear, and let me bid you adieu. Love, don't feel yourself unhappy. I pay the debt for you. Come up today, love, for I am sure to be put to death. Oh, Charlotte, what I must go through.
Well, either I pay the debt for you.
The rest of the letter is him just going, I love you, I love you, I love you. It's basically that. It doesn't make a lot of sense.
Yeah.
But yeah,
that's a lot like my embarrassing letters from my youth.
Is it coming out now? Is it?
Oh, yeah. It's all coming back. I love you.
Yes, James was convicted in a matter of minutes for the murder of his wife. He was sentenced to death. His body was given to science. He made a full confession before his hanging, admitting to poisoning his wife's milk. Very nice final aside on that story. It's great, isn't it? But Mary, when she was buried, like so, Mary Bigadite, the ancestor of Priscilla, the priest of the local church who baptized her, married her, and then had to bury her, wrote in the register, and he wrote it in such a really over the top way, and apparently it was a style at the time, going, "Murdered by her husband in the night in a most deliberate manner. The inquest continued for 3 days.
Not 3 days. My God, three.
3 days. So that are the many murders of the Bigadike family by poison.
Like it.
Every now and then you find these little tidbits.
Yeah.
Yes.
Find some murderous families.
That's a little bit of murder. I think it's time for a drink.
Oh, God, yes.
Yes.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And UnitedHealthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Nick, we have our drinks.
We do. It's 4 minutes past Lego time. I told you, 8 o'clock when the Lego building starts, whatever was going on, so...
I think we can squeeze in another quick poisoning story before we hit the Lego.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a good one.
Okay, go on then.
Oh, yeah. We're going to 1822, so earlier than the last one. But this is a story, again, big credit to the wonderful Linda Stratman, who has written many a book about poisoners over the centuries. But we're going to France.
Oh, nice.
We're to Bourg in France.
Going to where?
Bourg. Pierre-Joseph Bouvier.
Okay.
A wealthy attorney from Bourg. He is widowed with one daughter, Josephine. And Pierre is thinking about who should receive his legacy when he dies. So he's about kind of middle age now. Josephine is in her 20s, I believe. You know, just very successful, wealthy family. But he's now thinking, who should get my money? Yes. Now you should think, Josephine, only child, should get it.
But she's a girl.
She is a girl.
Can't be trusted.
Ugh.
With money. You'd find her a husband.
Well, she does have a husband.
Oh, okay.
She does have a husband. The wonderfully named Alexander Marie Henri... Do Barede. I'm going to call him Alexander for that.
They're all Alex.
Alex, that's it. Because I don't want to butcher the French language that much.
Anymore.
Anymore than is absolutely necessary. Yes, husband Alex. Daddy doesn't quite like Alex.
We can't pronounce his name, that's why.
No. He's French and he goes, this is too much.
This is just a silly name.
This is fancy and notions with you. Doesn't like him or his family. Doesn't like her, who she's married into. None of that. Daddy's now thinking of marrying a nice young lady who he has had a relationship with for a few years. Been stepping out with her. Wonderful. And if he marries her, then obviously she's going to be in line with the inheritance. And Josephine does not like this one bit. Mm. None of that. And she shouts about it a lot.
Okay.
Makes her feelings very well known to all and sundry, to the point where Pierre is sort of jokingly saying to his friends, going, I'm slightly worried my daughter might kill me.
Yeah.
Do me some harm.
It's not ideal, is it? When your children are going, my God, I deserve all your cash.
It's not filling you with confidence.
No, indeed.
Of their
yes.
love and support
exactly,
and everything.
Yes.
We don't know how much of a shit he was.
No.
He might be a horrible daddy, but... He sort of brushes it off. In the autumn of 1822, Josephine makes a little trip to the old chemist. The old chemist asks for some good old rough on rats.
What's that in French?
Well, I'll tell you.
Good.
Because, unfortunately, rough on rats, everyone was asking rough on rats, is it that? The various rat poisons, rough on rats, I think, was developed in the late 1800s. So this would have been rough on rats, but I did look up what the French equivalent of rat poison was, and I found one,
nice.
And I found one image, and it is l'infernal.
The final.
No, the infernal.
The infernal. That's very dramatic.
And it's got a great picture on the front of a cat sitting looking at a bowl of food that rats are dying around, and it's like, we love cats.
Just the cats have a little pitchfork and their horns.
There's no devil reference otherwise. It's just the infernal and just poison for rats and mice. And this cat who's just sort of looking at its claws going, The cat is happy. Cat should not eat those rats.
No,
they're
indeed.
Full of poison. So anyway, she goes and buys that. And goes, rough on rats, the French equivalent. She needed a guarantor. Husband is brought along. Can I have some arsenic? Absolutely. There's a man here now. Wonderful. Sells her the poison. She's like, ah, ha, ha, my poisonous plot is developing. Josephine decides she's going to host a dinner party at her house.
Is that how the invite sound like?
She's going to get some lockets. But her father is staying with her at house. Now, he's not going to be a guest at the dinner party, but the dinner party is definitely going ahead.
Nice.
She's got a plan. She wants to celebrate and also kill her father.
Okay, but he's not invited to the party.
No, he's not.
That seems mean.
No, she's preparing for the soiree. The morning of the soiree, she prepares her father's breakfast, which is bread and boiled milk. Tasty. That could have been an ingredient. I think you would have hit me.
Boiled milk.
And yes, she's going to send that up to Daddy, who's lounging in his room, send him up his breakfast. And she gives it to a servant girl, Marie. Now, Marie would later say that she saw Josephine in the kitchen with a paper packet in her hand. around the milk. Mm-hmm. Now, Marie, being the little shifty servant that she is, she's bringing up the delicious boiled the
delicious,
bread and milk.
Delicious breakfast.
Delicious. Take it there. Little skin on that milk. I'm having that. But, have a little bite. Yeah, no, they don't have a lot to eat. And like, you know, he's a lawyer. He's stingy. Does that really give you the... No, she's chewing it really slowly.
Ah, shut up.
She eats the skin off the milk, gives it to Pierre. Marie instantly falls ill. Like, I'm not right. I am not okay. Starts vomiting, runs out into the garden.
Don't blame her.
Yeah.
I'll be vomiting.
Just with the milk. No, she runs out into the garden, is just vomiting profusely, is not well. Everything else is happening. She's puking into the rose bushes. Josephine leans out the window shouting, "Did you eat any of my father's breakfast?" For no reason whatsoever, I want to know that.
Did you eat the poison milk?
It's like, she's like, well, that is a bit weird. You're not asking how I am, just more about the dad's breakfast. She finds out that daddy is suffering from the same symptoms. Pierre, but much, much worse. Marie, the maid, goes down and sits with the housekeeping staff who are trying to look after her. Upstairs, Pierre is in agony, vomiting continuously, just projectile
downstairs
vomiting.
They go, "Could you be quiet? We're having a lovely dinner party down
here." No, the dinner party hasn't started yet. Oh, okay. It will. This is daytime. Her just going,
starting to arrive.
Yes, daddy, get it all out. I have to go back and do the vol-au-vent soon. So yeah, daddy's upstairs, absolutely terrible. A doctor is called, of course, straight away. Leeches, bleed it all out of him.
Definitely.
Even Josephine goes, who wants her dad dead, going, "That's horrible. No, I'm not letting you bleed my father. That's crazy. Let's call another doctor." Another doctor comes in and he goes, "No, he needs sedatives and antispasmodics. That's what he needs." The other doctor arguing with him the whole way with a knife. For all we know, the other doctor is prescribing heroin.
Yeah.
Maybe. That's it. It doesn't help.
Antispasmodics made up of ground up leeches. Applied and paste over the face.
Josephine's clapping along to any of this, going, "That seems more reasonable." Absolutely fine.
It's a lot more sensible.
But what's key here is while the trained professionals are upstairs with Pierre trying to help him badly, downstairs, Marie, really sick, has gone in and is being looked after by the head housemaid, a woman named Brune. And Brune is going to use her own methods. Okay. She uses her common sense and she gets just as much milk as she can, and she's like, "Get that down, you love, like, absolutely chug the milk. That's going to calm your stomach, that's going to stop the spasm, it's going to stop all the pain." And she's right. And okay, she gets the milk down, and anything is also going to bring stuff up if she needs to vomit and everything. Marie's okay now. It's not a be-all cure.
No,
but Brune is like, right, puts two and two together. This maid is sick, master's upstairs really sick, runs upstairs to Josephine and says, "Look, give him milk. This is she's okay.
Walk downstairs
now. Yeah, I know what I'm doing." Josephine scoffs at her. "I will not hear of using such foolish folk remedies, my dear father. How dare you?
We've got fancy doctors here that were paying a fortune."
Exactly. They have leeches and knives. You are not to come anywhere near my father. I want that very well known, and everyone record this. She is not to come anywhere near him with anything that could help. Please leave. I don't care that Maria's fine, is now doing cartwheels across the garden. It's fine. So the house staff slink away. Pierre remains in pain. And Josephine continues with the dinner party downstairs. The guests arrive. They're like, "Hello, how are you?" "Yes, that's just my father screaming upstairs."
"It's fine."
Yeah. She tells everyone her father has fallen ill. Natural causes. He's old.
Natural screaming.
Yeah. Howling all night, by all accounts. And there are points where the convulsions take over that it takes four men to hold him down. So that might have been a party game that she sort of did for the dinner party.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Who wants to hold my father down while he pukes blood?
Like a bucking bronco type thing. Let's stack things on the father and then... how many things you can get before he twitches and they all fly off.
Sounds horrible. She probably fucking did that. Yeah, yeah. So they're all having lovely, lovely cheeses. Eventually, from Linda Stratman's account of this, his urine dried up. The irritated bladder contracted with such force that it ruptured.
Oh.
He became delirious. The
how
violence...
How do I know that?
Because I suppose it would be post-mortem. And it must
well,
have
yes,
been.
After the fact. Yes, not at the time.
Well, yeah. You would hope, because otherwise she's just made that up. And I don't think she would. He became delirious. The violence of his convulsions, as I said, was so extreme. Four men were needed to hold him down on the bed. The torment continued until 10 o'clock that night when he died. Mm. Probably around the time they were serving the cheese course. And they were like, "Oh, thank God, he's quiet now." Yes. So, where do you summer? Josephine had not sent for doctors until much later in the day, even after that initial call out. Mm. She really hadn't called them. And when they came back, they said, "Have you given him any of the medicine we gave you?"
No.
I didn't know. On Pierre's death, his daughter sprung into action and went straight to his house to go through all of his paperwork and take all the money that was just lying around. Yeah. Rumours, of course, were circulating that Pierre and his maid had been poisoned. Had been poisoned in the household. But Josephine was a wealthy woman.
Mm.
She was a wealthy attorney's daughter. No suspicion could fall on her. Oh. And she is quite confident. She's quite confident because no one can detect poison.
No, indeed. It's entirely, entirely untraceable. No,
this is 1822, don't you know? There's a little man named Ophir who's operating. She doesn't know about him. And everyone is willing to turn a blind eye. All except for the maid, Marie.
Mm.
The maid. She tells Josephine, she knows exactly what she's done. She knows. She knows what's going on. She needs to pay up.
Ooh, risky business, maid.
She needs to pay up, or she's going to tell the police. And also, if you don't pay up, if you do anything to me, I will place a curse upon your head.
Oh, that's more scary.
That you will live with ill health for the rest of your life. Such ill health that you would wish death upon you.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. And Josephine weeps and weeps. Oh, God, you're up. It's so awful. I will pay you. I will pay you. Now, Pierre had left the maid money in his will, mm-hmm. 4,000 francs. It's a slightly weird setup that I don't entirely understand, but I think the 4,000 francs, that Pierre had left would be accessible 5 years after his death.
Okay.
So it seems to be written in. This is how Linda Stratman writes it. Josephine gives Marie two bills, one for 4,000 francs and one for 2,000 francs, payable with interest 9 or 10 years after the date.
Okay. For planning.
Yeah. Maybe that's a thing because like with the will, it was like 4 or 5 years after. Mm. Marie accepts. She's okay. Fine. She's happy with that. She's absolutely fine. She'll keep shtum. Of course, Josephine has no intention of paying out. So when the time comes for her probably to receive the money from Pierre, no, she's not going to pay her anything. No, of course not. And like, what proof do you have? He's dead and buried in the ground.
Yeah.
No one can get me. No one can get me. Marie instantly goes to the authorities. And Josephine gets wind of this and is feeling quite cocky. But then she starts hearing about new methods of detecting poison.
There's this weird thing called science that's been invented.
Oh, you can dig them up and find out that there's poison in there. Mm. And it's still in its early stages, but okay, right. I'm going to sell all my stuff and flee France.
That's not at all guilty.
No. Pierre's body was dug up and was remarkably well preserved.
Mm.
Wasn't that funny? And this was recognised by the priest, the gravedigger, and some of the National Guard who fired a salute at the burial 7 years before. They were all called in, apparently.
Oh, okay.
Who was all there? Like, nothing better to do. Let's see, dig up a corpse. Two expert chemists carried out very detailed tests to sort of boil down little bits of it and, like, all of these different tests to find traces of arsenic. And they did, and it was a really important case that was reported on around the world because of how important toxicology was. So in November 1829, Josephine was tried in her absence for the murder of her father. The defense kept arguing that it wasn't arsenic in his body. We've got loads of chemists in places far away who said it wasn't, who've not seen a body ever. But Josephine was found guilty, and it was deemed that she should be conducted to a place of execution en chemise with naked feet and with her head covered with a black veil, and to be exposed upon the scaffold while an officer shall read the sentence to the people, and to have her right hand cut off, and then to be immediately executed. But she's not there.
Cut her hand off.
Cut her hand off and then...
And then execute her.
That makes a point.
Well, fair enough.
Suffer.
Why not?
Suffer.
Enjoy.
But she's not there.
Yeah, this is true.
She's not there.
She's buggered off somewhere.
She spent 3 years on the run, but she inexplicably returned to France.
Fool!
In 1832. Now, I think she may have been moving around France. It was a particular jurisdiction that she couldn't cross the lines of, but she came back into that jurisdiction, maybe to see her husband. Her husband had always stayed there.
I'm probably thinking 3 years later, no one gives a fuck about now.
Oh, they did. She was brought to court to face charges. Some people think maybe that it was a plea bargain or something. But so much time had passed, the experts who had found the arsenic in her father's body were now doubting themselves. And they had now been rigorously tested to say, well, was this arsenic that someone
fed him. Mm. One chemist was going, yes, it is, absolutely. And another one went, it may be arsenic that I put in when I was testing it for arsenic to see if someone else had put it in, to see if there was arsenic. He was literally that going, like, I put some charcoal with arsenic in the body, and that might have been the arsenic that was in his body. So that just throws the case out. Also, another friend of Pierre's gave evidence at this trial as well, talking about his debauched lifestyle.
Oh.
That saying he was a man who was of extravagant means. He loved to drink. He loved to use stimulants. And he was a big fan of cantharidin.
Oh, fun times.
The little Spanish fly. Mm. Yep. He reportedly wanted to live a short, enjoyable life rather than a long, dull one.
Well, can't blame him for that.
And it was even implied that Marie, the maid, had been having an affair with Pierre. Mm. So that's why she said all of these things. And Josephine was acquitted.
Yeah.
She walked free, and her fate is unknown.
Oh, mm. Wow. Well, but running away for 3 years is somewhat guilty. That doesn't give a great impression.
Oh yeah, she just fled.
Just
fled.
Running off for 3 years. That certainly gives a guilty impression, I feel.
She did not think as many poisoners did for a long time, even into the 20th century.
Up until now.
They think, oh no, you can't find poison in the stuff. Body. No, it's fine. Like if he's dead and buried in the ground, they'll never find arsenic. But no, they did.
No, they can.
But even then, they were hoisted by their own petard because people could still test, because it was so early, the way they were testing arsenic in corpses. They doubted themselves, and then she just walked out as well. Maybe she didn't kill him. Maybe she didn't.
Yeah.
Maybe. He accidentally, on purpose, died.
Yeah. No, I'm thinking she probably did have something to do with it.
Some people could surmise in a wonderfully Agatha Christie way that Marie the maid did it. Mm. Like she intentionally poisoned herself in order to poison him to get the legacy that was leading, and then she was going to blackmail the daughter, knowing that.
But then why would the daughter pay up in that scenario? Though.
Because there was this long.
But why would she have pretended that she was going to?
Because she would have been the prime suspect. Because she had been shouting about her father being annoyed, and she wanted the inheritance. She'd made it known that she wanted her father dead. In theory, I mean, that's fiction. That's a wonderful story. I know you're looking at this as an editor, going, I don't buy it.
No, I'm not entirely convinced, but okay.
Oh, I'm sure it will sell in airports.
Yeah, well, exactly. Yes, make a great book.
Exactly. There we are. But there you go. There are a couple of good old fashioned rat poisoning stories. There are so many out there, and they're too delicious not to share with you, my people.
Marvellously done.
Yes, there we are. So, yeah, any other thoughts on Josephine or the bigger dykes?
Well, no, I mean, the first one's interesting, but apart from that, sort of the curious change in lodger, so that's. I have a feeling that may well be just the newspaper just got the fucking name wrong. Lodger. That would make far more sense than there being some weird sort of lover's quadrangle of husband, wife, two lodgers.
I think it can happen.
Crack on, but it gets quite like a...
don't bring logic into this. They made a mistake. They were like, yeah, ironmonger, fishman, whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
Fishman, that was never his name, by the way.
Dear old French lady. No, that was her.
A lot of the poisoning cases that are left are very cut and dry. But
that is the thing. We've done a lot of mysterious ones.
But that's okay, because I think, mystery is good every now and then. Mm. Cut and dried, it's the journey.
This is true.
I think the journey is fun, always with poisoning, as we've had fun today.
Have we really?
haven't you?
Oh, fine, okay.
You begrudgingly have had fun.
Begrudging fun.
Begrudging fun. Your favourite kind of fun.
My favourite kind of fun.
Well, there you go. What do you think, people? What do you think of the story of the Bickerdike family, of Josephine and Pierre, and the people who were suspected of not murdering their family, and people who definitely did murder their family? Mm. What do you think of either of the cases? Do you think there's more nuance behind either of them?
No.
Do you think we need to question them more? Or do you just love a good old-fashioned arsenic poisoning story? There are many little ones out there, and we're always happy to do sort of compendium episodes every now and then.
I haven't done one for a while.
If you like them, we're very happy to do them. because we have fun on the journey.
Tell us what you think. Jump on the comments of this episode. Share your thoughts, your feelings, your theories, your musings about any of the poisons that they should have been using. But most importantly, while you're listening, you must mix up the yellow rat.
The yellow rat. That would be a treat.
Good.
Yeah, no, I like that.
You're a genius.
Yeah, no, I'm really pleased with that.
Yeah,
you that did worked, a that worked
very
well.
Good job.
Yeah. So yes, the recipe will be out this evening. So yeah, it has got a lot of stuff in, but stuff that you'll probably have-ish. Mm. Sue's might be a bit weird. The other stuff you'll have by now.
If anyone's bought Sue's, this is the one to try.
This is one that
actually
works.
The one to try. If you are listening, I don't know if you're listening in real time, if you're revisiting any of them and you're going, oh, I must get round to doing the cocktails, don't do any of the previous Sue's ones. This is the one. The Nick Gordon
tasty.
Twist.
It was tasty.
Remember, episode 200 is coming up, where we are planning to do a retrospective of our favourite episodes, favourite cocktails. Please start sending us messages if there are things you would like us to revisit and discuss on this bumper episode. We'd love to know your thoughts. And if you have messages you'd like us to read out, we'd love to do that as well. If you haven't already, please consider joining us on patreon.com, where you get lots of extra content from the Poisoner's Cabinet. Please leave us a review on Apple iTunes, a nice one, and follow us on all of the social media, YouTube, Instagram, and TikTok, because that really helps everyone else discover us.
Quiet.
Thanks for listening, guys. We have been the people inside the Poisoner's Cabinet. We will see you next week. And remember, your loved ones are trying to kill you.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.